Radio Live with your hosts, Jim and Sandy Young. Welcome, everyone. I am Reverend Sandy.
And I am Reverend Jim.
Welcome to Angel Talk Radio Live. Our show is sponsored by the Living Light Center, a church of faith and healing. For anyone interested, Jim and I do personal readings. And if you'd like to have a personal reading, you can call 304-567-3354 or email sandysangeltalk@aol.com. That's sandysangeltalk@aol.com. Well, welcome, everyone. We have a wonderful show here for you today, and it's titled Spiritual and Material Aspects of Polarity. You know, many wonder why polarity exists at all, yet everything created in this universe seems to incorporate one form of polarity or another. Whether we attribute polarity to the material or spiritual, all humans on this earth seem to constantly be experiencing polarity in one form or another. You know, be it friends, work, relationships, religion, or everything that we choose to be a part of. So we thank you for joining us here on Angel Talk, sponsored by the Living Light Center, a church of faith and healing.
And you know, Sandy, I even have to ask, I mean, is polarity in everything? I mean, relationships? I mean, you know, when two people get together and they decide they want to, you know, be mates together and or get married, or, I mean, is polarity in everything that exists? I mean, from spiritual, even in the material. We don't necessarily think of in the higher heavens that there's any polarity up there. We only think of it being down here. And we think that we're the only ones that have to deal with it, and that, you know, it is our greatest, you know, many people look at it as being their greatest asset. Some other people look at it as being a nuisance. But it can be all of those things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I'd like to start off with a little prophecy here. Okay. Can you stand in your truth? Will you have the strength to stand up for what you know is your truth? The day is coming when you are going to be tested on what you believe. You may be threatened to do something that is not your truth, but if you stand strong and do what is right, God will be there for you. Many people are being misled and are moving further away from the real truth of who they are and why they are here. Without proper guidance, you may be deceived and lose your faith in God. Never doubt if your faith is strong, because if you follow Jesus' teachings, you will be walking in the light of the Lord. When those who feel they have power over others try to force you to do their will, no, you always have a choice. Never allow fear to determine your fate. When the Spirit of God is with you, your life will always stand strong. The more you resist the darkness, the more it will challenge you. So find within yourself the courage and strength you need to resist all temptations. This physical world, things of material will come and go, but your soul carries with it the love and pureness of God. Can you stand in judgment and say, I lived my life the best I could for my Lord and Savior? Do not hold on to the material things as if they are your God, for you will be disappointed in the end. It's only through prayers, meditation, and your oneness with the Lord will you find your eternal happiness. Know that the earth is going through some changes, and they are going to become more intensified, and that each of you will have to hold strong within you. And what is it that you hold on to as your rock? What is it that keeps you strong and solid? If it's not your faith and belief in God, then it's not strong enough. And when these changes come, and disasters begin to happen, You must realize within you that you have the strength and power to hold your faith and to walk whatever path it is you need to walk in order to get through it. But only with the help of God, on the arm of God, will you know that you are safe. Hold this faith and believe in yourself and know that we are one with that of God and the light. Blessings to you.
Uh-huh. And that was through the Holy Trinity?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
All right. So, when we volunteered to come to this planet, we realized that we were entering into a polarity location. You know, we were dropping in vibration to a lower existence to try to master our abilities and overcome the temptations of darkness, and that we would be challenged by the opposites of the light to prove we had the conviction to stay loyal to our Lord and Savior. So, from the point we were born, we began to face the challenges that this life was about to present to us. First, we had to learn the basics of polarity, that there was night and day, sleeping and being awake times, and realizing the light of the sun radiated its brightness upon us during the day while the moon was at night, the difference being the amount of brightness that the light emitted. Then we experienced the hot and cold, and usually it was by touching something to feel the difference in the temperatures. The experience of touching something too hot made us realize that there was varying degrees of temperature. The only thing that separated the temperature was its level of heat or coldness. Yet it is still on the same scale of temperature. So I can still remember the first time my mother told me not to touch that hot stove. Well, of course, when she wasn't looking, I had to touch it. And yes, I realized at that point it was very hot, as it burnt my finger.
Yeah, nowadays you do kind of the same thing, except usually you say, Jim, touch that stove and see what happens.
And from the people around us, we experience different emotions, you know, love or hate. When someone expressed their love to you, your spirits were lifted, and you felt a bond with that person, an openness. You were drawn to them. And when you're in alignment with God, you feel his love around you and within you completely. Our mental states link us with the energies of the universe and its many varying degrees of understanding. We experience the lessons of life. We grow to relate to our emotions, our thoughts, our feelings towards others, towards nature, and even objects. We learn to have self-control over situations that could lower our body's frequencies or vibrations, and we begin to consciously grow and master decision-making so not to allow the ego to control us. So as we align our will with the will of God, our path in life becomes more obvious to us. We avoid a lot of the hard lessons that would have been required for us to see our oneness with God. You know, our bodies rise in vibration and we take on more light. And this light is consciousness. It allows us to understand ourselves better and our connection to spirit, the oneness that we let the spirit realm to experience here on earth, the polarity. Our whole purpose of life is to reconnect our spirit with the physical body, to align ourselves with God, and know that in this union, we have a chance of not having to experience every hard lesson in life. It is because of Jesus that he gave a way to live, one that would help guide us in the right direction without having to deal with so many problems, to be able to see the temptations as what they really are, traps to catch us. To be able to realize that being angry is easy, but being loving can be a challenge. But it is the way that leads us back to God. When we take the easy way out or separate ourselves from God, we only invite the darkness into our lives. It leads to lies, fear, anger, stealing, possibly drug addiction, and alcohol abuse, all of which creates a mental, emotional, and physical decline in ourselves. And this confusion opens the door for belief systems to become twisted and lost in a reality that can invite a lot of darkness into your life. When this happens, your personality can become very evil. Evil requires a person to use their power and consciousness to project this energy of themselves onto another. You are being convinced to turn against the created order, against existence itself, a consciousness that has become an inversion or an anti-being. There are two different beings capable of doing this. One is humans, and the other is angels. Evil itself is really a spiritual energy. It was not created by God. And as for good and evil, it requires a reality beyond that of the physical. Evil, like good, is transcendent. Its existence proves that the spirit realm does exist. Evil is a problem because it was not created. It should not exist, but it does. It defies the creative order. It exists in defiance of existence. It is a force that is a personal one, requiring consciousness and intent. When an angel or human turns to the dark side, their beliefs are rearranged into a way of thinking that twists all of reality. What is bad seems good. What is wrong seems right. It makes us believe that there are no guidelines to live by. Yet, in the end, it has taken away all of our spiritual light. The things that were a sacred union are broken apart. And in this inversion, you move closer to a being that should not be here, the devil, the destroyer, the defier. Since he cannot destroy God, he goes after God's children. He seeks to war against God's creation and his works. And his objective is to separate mankind from God. And if he could remove God's creation from him, then he would try to rule over God. So, the dark energies have the intention to destroy all the good work of God, to be the Antichrist, doing what would defy the good. These energies only enforce the warlike tendencies within, empowering those with intentions of destruction and control to overtake whatever they feel is necessary to take. As the energies of the planet raise, it allows for consciousness to raise within each person. But for this to take place, a person has to release whatever dark energies they are holding on to within themselves to make room for the higher levels of light. Some of these lower energies can be released by just making a conscious decision that you no longer choose to hold on to this belief, and you want to change the way you understand it. Well, once this choice has been made, and the mind agrees to let go of that energy, it is gone. Maybe there can be some residue left, but usually there's not enough to fully convince you to go back to the old way of thinking. So once these lower vibrational energies are let go of, you are opening the door to allow the higher levels of light to fill that space. Through the light entering, it brings with it lots of awareness and higher understandings. It brings you closer to the Christ consciousness, what you're working towards for all consciousness or oneness with God. No matter how hard you try, there is always going to be that opposite energy trying to tempt you and lead you towards its way of operating. One of the ways most people get tricked is through monetary ways. Everyone wants to be wealthy and buy or do whatever they want to do. This is one of the easiest ways the dark side uses to convince you to do its way. It will make you rich. That's the statement. You can become as rich as you want. Well, usually it doesn't, but if it should give you the prosperity you're hoping for, it seems that it comes with a price. A lot of times it comes as an obligation to someone who then can control you or force you to do what they want you to do. It takes away your freedom. It is the price you pay for the money you received. The polarity of wealth and poverty is a stage that most people must experience those spectrums within a lifetime to learn the lessons involved with it. When you're at your highest level of financial abundance, most times there's not a lot of caring for the less fortunate. It becomes all about yourself and how much you can accumulate, having the biggest and the best of everything. But when you're at your lowest financial point, it humbles you. It makes you realize what a lot of people are having to experience because of their situation, be it health bills, job loss, or some other situation. It is usually then that you are the closest to God because you know that He is your only hope. You can see that in the end. It all comes back to being one with God. When we look at polarity in another aspect of life, there are energy charges, like electrical and magnetic, that the charges are both positive and negative, and that these charges are how the electrical circuits and electromagnetic fields operate. Our planet has a north and south pole. Magnetics also have a north and south pole, and these poles will either attract or repel each other depending on their polarity. When we look at polarity and its principles, it opens a way of seeing how, when we want to transmute something, it is all about changing the level of something into something else. It is about looking at the situation and seeing its opposite and taking it from its lowest point and moving it closer to its highest point. The two energies are like holding a rod, with one end being sadness and the other end, joy. The distance between the two energies is the levels or degrees that it takes to reach its opposite side. So, by focusing on its positive opposite side, you can begin to increase your charge of energy within yourself until you eventually reach its point of joy. You will notice, as you work on attaining this joy, each level that you move closer to will allow you to feel more and more of that joy. It is our mental abilities that draw us closer to what we want to accomplish. It is through our mental abilities that it can connect us to anything we can think of or imagine in our mind. The more we focus on things in life, the more we draw those things into the physical realm. If we are always focused on negative things, then most likely that will begin to fill your life. If the thrill of fear is your desire, then what do you think will begin to manifest in your life? When we indulge in violent situations or even movies, our brain can become confused as to what is reality and what is just a movie. The dark energies are always looking for a vulnerable or enticing way to attract people to it. We must function with some wisdom in situations so not to get caught up in these traps. When we look at the serpent and Eve in the Garden of Eden, it reflects the constant battle between the desires of the flesh and the pursuit of righteousness. The serpent's cunning nature serves as a warning against succumbing to sinful temptations and the importance of remaining faithful to God's commandments. The serpent's interactions with Eve demonstrates its ability to deceive and manipulate. By questioning God's command and planting doubt in Eve's mind, it exploits human vulnerabilities and desires. So one must always discern and be aware of the temptations and their consequences. Just as the serpent lures Eve with the promise of knowledge so too are humans often enticed by the pursuit of knowledge and the desire to understand the complexities of the world.
You know, I can't agree with you that it was only knowledge that she was seeking.
Well, that's true.
With the serpent.
It was
but,
one.
You know, had the serpent been a female, then it would have been Adam that probably would have been the one that succumbed to temptation, because that would have been his polarity, correct?
Mm-hmm. Probably.
In this case, you know, it was a serpent and Eve. So, you know, you have to have the two sides. And when you have two sides like that, you argue with yourself even as to which way to go. What's my truth? What is the truth? You know, who's telling me the truth? And we argue with ourselves. You have to. If there's two of you, two hemispheres of the brain, it's going to be natural for you to argue with yourself.
Absolutely. Because the serpent serves as a cautionary reminder to approach such quests with discernment and to recognize the potential dangers that lie in the pursuit of knowledge without moral guidance. You know, in John 3:14 and 15, Jesus said, "Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that everyone who believes may have eternal life in him." This metaphorical comparison highlights the transformative power of the cross and the eternal life that believers can attain through faith in Jesus.
Jamie, so the serpent on the pole became the center point of a trinity.
Yes,
on
did.
One side you had the vipers that were biting everybody and people were dying, and you had the people who had made the choice to, you know, move into that area. And by putting it up on the pole, you created a center point that people could look at and they wouldn't die.
Exactly. Very good point. Jamie Buckingham wrote, you know, compared Christ or Caesar, and noted that they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, Revelation 12:11. It's impossible to think of Jesus' ministry in Israel without being reminded of the powerful impact he made on his followers after he was gone. Many leaders are honored, some even worshipped, while they were here. But after they're gone, however, most are soon forgotten. Wandering about the ruins of the ancient city of the Caesarea ruins, okay, by the sea, located midway between Tel Aviv and Aviv of the Mediterranean coast, you find evidence of the powerful influence of Christianity. And on an ancient Roman pillar that was lying on its side next to the excavated street, called the Street of Statues, here the so-called shakers and movers of Roman society were memorialized in stone. For centuries, this street, with its long-forgotten marble people lining the marble pavements, lay buried in the rubble of forgotten civilizations.
And they're here now, cut in marble or stone or cast in some kind of iron and put up as, you know, oh, this person should be remembered. You know, people who look at the guy on the horse, they can't remember who that guy is or what he did, you know, or anything historical about him. I mean, but yet, somebody took the money to cast it into, you know, a man on a horse, and if he's setting up, you know, up off the saddle, it means something. If one leg is up on the horse, it means something else. We have no idea. And that's why statues just will never give us
right
what we're looking for.
Exactly. And these marble statues decorate an open-air museum in the city of Caesarea. And no one remembers their names or what they did. Not so with Jesus, who received little honor while on earth and eventually being executed as a common criminal. You know, perhaps his death was ordered by one of these nameless and forgotten Romans, yet Jesus' influence is greater today than ever before. Caesarea was one of the most glittering cities of the ancient world. Harold the Great spent 12 years and the equivalent of $1 billion building it. He dedicated it to Caesar Augustus in 10 BC. And it later became the capital of the Roman government in Judea. This magnificent city was built with blocks of granite floated down the Nile from Aswan, Egypt, and the marble brought from Italy. The harbor provided anchorage for as many as 100 Roman war galleys. And south of the town are the ruins of the Roman amphitheater, which matched those in Rome and Athens. And in the days following the ascension of Jesus, this became a place of horror and death as thousands of Jews accepted Jesus as the Messiah. Christians were lashed to poles in the center of the Colosseum and eaten alive by wild animals. Women were crucified on crosses, which stood around the perimeter. Their murdered babies hung around their necks. And Jews also martyred, especially in A.D. 70, when the Romans held games here to celebrate the destruction of Jerusalem. Why all this torture and killing? The Romans would not tolerate worship other than to Caesar, their god. Christians knew they would not worship both Jehovah and Caesar. They chose to die rather than renounce Jesus. Before being thrown to the lions, those early Christians were given a last chance to recant. Some did, and bowing before the statue of Caesar, and they said, "Caesar is Lord." However, the vast majority, having been transformed by the power of the living Christ, refused to deny him. They went to their death singing, "Christ is Lord." Such martyrs are among the ones described in Revelation 12. They overcame Satan by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. The first statue at the beginning of the ancient street of statues is headless. Last night, one of the nation's top archaeologists said that the statue was deliberately sculpted without a head. The sculptor knew that the life of the Caesar, the king of Rome, was tenuous. The lives of these kings forever, who called themselves immortal, could end at any moment, and a new Caesar would be crowned. So rather than have to carve a new statue every time a Caesar died or was assassinated, the sculptor would merely sculpt a new head and throw away the old one. Caesars came and went. Jesus, however, despite his death at the hands of the Romans, lives on, empowering his people with his spirit to spread the kingdom of God to all the world. The Apostle Paul returned from both his second and third missionary trips to the harbor of Caesarea, teeming with Roman war galleys. From here, Paul finally sailed from Rome, where he died for his faith. The ministry of Jesus continues through millions of men like the Apostle Paul, even today throughout the world. But the Caesars of the world are forgotten, their heads buried under the rubble of hundreds of decayed civilizations. God doesn't need more Caesars. He is simply looking for a few good men and women who will not deny his son when faced with the lions of this world.
We in no way are advocating the military's use of, you know, of that statement.
No, absolutely not.
So there's so much. I mean, when it comes to polarity, you know, we really don't give it enough viewing or enough thinking about it or pondering it. And yet, it appears everywhere. I mean, you can be in the best of moods and everything, and all of a sudden you'll pick something up, two of something, and one of them all of a sudden will fall on the floor and break. I mean, that's polarity. It will always try to outdo the other, the left hemisphere of the brain or the right hemisphere of the brain. They will argue. They are actually, it's a natural occurrence for them to do so. So how does one come to their truth? How does one come to the truth? I had this conversation the other night with a friend of ours, and you know, she looked at me and she said, well, she goes, I have my truth. She goes, and I know others have their truth, you know, and it may be different. And I said, well, I said, but I'm sure, I said, I know you are very spiritual. I said, but there's only one truth. Now, there's a growth toward truth, and that is oftentimes what we are doing. But there is only one truth. There's only one God, so there can only be one truth. And when we begin to divide truth up amongst ourselves, you know, little here, little there, what we do is we're dividing God, and we cannot do that. It's impossible, actually, to do, and yet we try the hardest we can sometimes to divide that up. Well, your truth is different, you know. I mean, my truth is this, come on. You know, if we could just all come to the one conclusion that there's one God and worship, you know, God, the way you choose is your business. I mean, you have the right, because there is no coercion in spirituality. God does not force anyone to love him, to choose him, to choose his ways. But there's only one other way, and the other way is everything but the light. It is the path that will lead you farther and farther, farther into the darkness. And when you do that, one little act can push you a little bit into the darkness, but just enough that now you don't have all of the you know, the factors of the light that you were holding. And so you do something else. It may seem insignificant, a lie maybe, and it shoves you a little farther into the darkness. And I remember even asking at one point the angels, you know, why is it that there are people that do black magic? I mean, they gather together and they do this black magic wanting to force their way upon others' free will. And why do they keep doing it? And the answer came back, once you do it, it pushes you backward into the darkness just enough that now you don't have maybe all the wisdom you did have. And you do it again, and all of a sudden, guess what? It pushes you farther back. The more you do it, the farther into the darkness you go until you know nothing else except using magic to get your way. And what a shame. What a shame that is. You know, when we really take a look at it, you know, it shows up everywhere. And I know everybody out there listening to us that, you know, they know that if you're in a relationship, it's perfect, right? There are never any arguments, and everything works and flows just the way it should.
Sure. You know,
yeah. Is that, you know, you have to remember that God allowed Adam to push from within without, is the way the words are used, and created from himself the perfect mate. Because God said, it is not good that man should be alone. Well, I don't know that it was that good, you know, even after he had a mate, because there was constantly a disagreeing between the two. And that's the normal aspect of any relationship. I don't care if it's boss and worker. I don't care if it's two co-workers. You know, chances are, if you try to come together on something, if it's just the two of you, you know, you're going to have a disagreeing position. Because one's going to shift to the right, the other to the left. And the idea here is not to have that shift occur at all. If you stand in the middle, you avoid the swing of the pendulum, because there's a pendulum that swings. And if you gain prosperity in any way, shape, or form, any way other than through God, which is perfect, I mean, it is fed with the light, and it will sustain it for a way longer than if you don't, you know, if you don't manifest it without God. You manifest it through your own desires alone, or your own visions alone, then it probably will break right out of the box. But the whole idea is that, you know, manifesting or coming to the truth, it's there right in front of us. Wasn't it Jesus who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life? Oh, wow. I mean, you know, it's amazing to me that some of the most powerful scriptures or anything in Holy Writ is the polarities, but in the middle, you have a Trinity. And it is the truth. That's what it says. I am the way. So it's step by step. And experiencing what you need to, and then the truth comes, and then it leads you into life eternal. Everything really is simplistic if we just take the time to look at it in the way we were meant to. I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. And even when he was taught as a child, handpicked by the brotherhood, or the we call them the brotherhood, or the elders of the Essenes, was the one named Josie. She was teacher of the master, when he was of his youth. Josie helped Jesus' mother, taking care of him throughout his youth. Both mother and child were often in her care. And, I mean, what a beautiful, beautiful experience that that individual had. Yet she did make one mistake. She tricked the Magi, you know, when it came to Herod, and she literally had to pay for that because, you know, because she did that was when Herod ordered the slaughter of the Hebrew children. I think there were 2,000 of them, correct? It seems like there's always 2,000 whenever they slaughter something. But, you know, Jesus was taught in Persia, which was the Zoroastrian, India, which was the Magi, and then in Egypt. And he took it as an initiation with John the Baptist, you know, in the Great Pyramid. And there, the part of his teachings were completed, so he would then return home. And, you know, you may say, well, the pyramids, you know, they're just, you know, just made and no big deal. I tell you what, when we were over there, Sandy, we were there first in the morning, but there were 150 people behind us. And the gentleman that sets right at the entrance, and I guarantee you, if you set at that entrance, you know, there is something that changes within you without a doubt, and you are closer to God. I don't care what religion you are, because being able to set at the entrance of that pyramid day after day after day, I mean, it is just awesomely beautiful. And he looked at me and he said, "Do you pray?" And I said, "Constantly." And he said, "Okay." And he held up his hand and he held 150 people back while Sandy and I went into the pyramid and up into the king's chamber by ourselves. Now, of course, my wife, she has to, you know, experience it all. She, you know, that's just the way it is with the feminine and with the male. You know, there's the electrical and there's the magnetic. And so she ran over. The first thing she did was climb into that sarcophagus, you know. And I said, "Are you kidding me?" And she said, "Well, you don't think I'm going to come up here all the way from America and not climb into that sarcophagus?" I said, "Okay, you know." And, of course, after she did, I did too. But in there, you could hear this hum. Woo, woo, woo. And, I mean, it was loud, and it was natural. It came from the way the pyramid was constructed. And the ascending passageways were small. But you could see along the sides where there were places for wheels to fit into. And I believe that's how they created electricity or fire in those days, like when they tried to throw Daniel's three apprentices into the fire so that they would be killed. And the fire was so hot that it killed the soldiers that threw them in there. But when they looked into the fire, they could see four people. The three they threw in, and there was another. Christ was with them. And it's that way today. If we can just imagine it to be that way and live that way, then there is no guess as to what the truth is. Because I tell you what, this planet lives in a way that the truth sounds like a lie, and a lie sounds like the truth. And too often, well, that can't be. I mean, you know, this is the truth. Well, is it? I mean, do you know that for sure? Because I tell you what, once you start walking it, it may give you riches beyond riches. But you know what? Is that what we're here for? Is that what Christ brought us here for and created as the Logos? You know, everything that exists, you know, it says from the beginning, and God said, "Let there be light." Now, who was God talking to? When God speaks, trust me, there is something very powerful to take a look at. Because, I mean, when we're hearing that God spoke, "Let there be light," he was speaking to the Holy Spirit, or the mother aspect of the Godhead. And the codes of creation were placed within her. Can you imagine holding that? And when she let loose of them, you know, the Logos was created, the Yod-Heh Vav, hey, and the Logos was created, and he was the visible light. It's not that light didn't exist previous to that. It wasn't that everything was dark. It was that there are levels that you go through, and, you know, on the highest levels, we can't see it. Do you realize how many stars there are in the sky that we don't have the ability to see because our spectrum of vision is limited? But as we grow in consciousness, we may find that there's more stars up there. We see things up there that, we're not sure what those are. That's a little different, you know? And I hear people talking that way all the time. And we begin to experience more. We begin to see more. And we get more grace. Ask for grace every day of your life. I mean, Sandy and I have gone through a whole lot of things. And one day I quoted scripture to the angel, you know, and there was quietness for just a minute. And she came back and she said, okay. She goes, grace can be given in this situation. And I thought, whoa. Are you telling me I could have asked for grace all along, you know, and I wouldn't have had to experience this the way we did? She said, well, she said, sometimes grace can be given. Other times, someone has to walk every piece of it, even the emotional aspects, if you are here to help others. Because others, their soul will look at yours, and if they don't see that you have walked it and walked through the emotions of it, they won't see the issue as being the same as theirs, and your counsel probably won't be listened to. And so, trust me, ask for grace every day. Should be the first words out of your mouth when you get up in the morning. And it's been said in Holy Writ, Jesus is the one through whom all extremes are met. He also says, where two are gathered in my name, there will I be also. Oh, gee, is that as simple as the way, the truth, and the life? Yes, it's simple. It's that where two or more are gathered, even if it's the two hemispheres of your brain, you know, call in the Christ and as that one through whom all extremes are met. And it nullifies, you know, the polarity. Two people are gathered, you know, and they're going to pray. You call the Christ in, and he is in the center. And it literally, in geometry, sacred geometry, if you take two circles, you cannot put two circles together, no matter how hard you try, unless you have a third. When you have a third, the two overlap then, and what it creates, if you look at it, is the vesica piscis between the two. And that is what? The symbol, and it's only symbology, for the Christ. And it's given to us all over the place. And we will see all kinds of, you know, things that we think are showing us this or showing us that, when in reality, they're the most simplest things that give us the most information or aid us when we need it the most. We just have to be willing to accept it. That's the big key to it. And too often, we're not willing. Until Jesus returned from the teachings of the ancient wisdom of the great monotheistic religions of the world, remember, they left Bethlehem. They never registered for the census. He was not on the rolls. And they left because the angel told them to, and they traveled. And we forget that the Dead Sea Scrolls have been found now to verify the existence of the colony of the Essenes. They were Jewish, but they lived by the spirit of the law, not necessarily by the letter of the law. And living by the spirit of the law was what Jesus was all about. I mean, literally. And so they traveled throughout the world, basically, and they had the abilities to do that. Joseph of Arimathea had great ships, and he would go around the world, and he would gather things that the people in power wanted. They wanted them so bad. Spices, different spices, and different types of woods, and all kinds of things. And he would make sure he brought some of those back for them and gave them to them. And so they left him alone. Little did they know that as his ships would begin to leave, you know, Israel proper, Cana, that there were underground tunnels, they came out along the shore. And the Essenes would pop out just at the right time and be picked up by the ships and taken to where they needed to go. I mean, you know, there's so much that has been withheld from us. And it's time that you know, we began to understand it more so. When you talk about polarity, let's see, Jesus' lineage was Jacob, right? Then through King David. And then, you know, through Mary, whose lineage was of King David and Jacob. And she was Levite, which was also the priesthood. Jesus was not a carpenter. When you look at the original Greek, you will see that it does not denote carpenter. It denotes a rabbi. And everyone who viewed Jesus called him rabbi. His disciples called him rabbi. And if you weren't a rabbi, you would not be able to go into the temple and stand up at the podium and read from the scrolls, the holy scrolls. He was a rabbi in every sense of the word. And, you know, when we call him a carpenter, I mean, how much wood was there really in Cana? I mean, there's some, but very little. I mean, you know, it wasn't a whole lot of work for a carpenter, but he was a rabbi, and he taught. And they couldn't keep him from teaching in the temples because of the fact that he was a recognized rabbi. And that's so important. And yet, we're taught that from the time we're kids, and everybody says it, and everybody talks about it. And everyone that you will talk to, they will tell you the same thing. Oh, he was a carpenter. Really? Really? The Christ? I mean, and the lineage that he came from was, again, Jacob through King David, and then through his mother, Mary, who was also of the tribe of Levi. So was Joseph, but Joseph was not his natural father. But he was a Levite. And if you look at the other side, the brother of Jacob was Esau. And Esau was the one who gave up his birthright for a plate of food. I mean, how easy is it for the not-so-shiny light to be able to, you know, get you to swing to the one side? Really? You gave up your entire birthright? I mean, everything, look, I mean, your father was pretty rich. I mean, he had probably every camel that existed in the world, is my guess. I mean, and yet, you gave it away for a plate of food? That's how easy sometimes it is to fool us or to get us to go in a direction that is not good. And so Esau's lineage was of Herod. It ended up being Herod, who was the one that wanted Jesus dead more than anybody. It was Herod. He's the one who ordered the slaughter of every child that was under the age of 2 in Bethlehem when Jesus was born, and the reason why they had to escape from there before, you know, something could be done. He was watched over, of course. But when you look at it, here you go, the two brothers, Jacob and Esau. And Esau's lineage became what? Because of going through the darkness, you know, picking the polarity, and you'll see that throughout history, there's almost always two brothers, you know, and one usually is of the one side and the other the other side. Not always, but it can be. When you look at King David, he was not a perfect individual. He did some things that were, you know, beyond imagination even. But he was never guilty of the same offense twice, which made him a man after God's own heart. But when I was doing some of my research, I came to realize that King David was 30 years old when he became king of Israel. When Judah, which was, you know, considered, you know, the scepter will always lie with Judah, it was considered, you know, a great part of Israel and should have been, but it kept itself separate. It had its own kings, its own rulers, and the whole nine yards. And it fought its own battles. And yet, after David took up the kingship, 3 years later, which would have made him 33 years old, Judah became part of Israel proper. And for the first time, there was a unity of oneness in Israel. And those numbers, 30, let's see, that was the age that Jesus took up his ministry, 33. That was the year that Jesus was crucified and resurrected. There is a pattern to it. And Herod, nobody looks at Herod today and says, oh, wow, there's a great king. I mean, he was handpicked by the Romans so that they could have somebody that they could say is the king, you know, and think they had their own way. Did they? No, of course not. You know, Herod, if anything Herod did was against anything the Romans wanted, trust me, they'd replaced him in a New York second. And so, but they appointed the Sanhedrin, you know, the body politics of your churches. And they learned that don't just stamp them all out and kill them all, because that won't get you anywhere. People will just lay in wait until the chance comes that they can get it back. The key was they would just put in place people that would adhere to what they wanted and give the people their religions back. They didn't get nothing back. I mean, you know, even the doors of the temple, when they opened, if you walked up to the doors and you put money in the plate, well, and nothing happened, wasn't enough money. Put another coin in there, it may have been enough. And the plates then would weigh down, and when it did, the doors were on a pulley, and they would open up. Ah, God has accepted your gift. You know, I mean, but we don't look beyond what we see. What must be true, because the door's opened. I mean, God opened them for me. Next time, I'll make sure I have enough money. I mean, and this goes all the way back. I mean, even to the Pope. I mean, there was a time when you could pay your way through purgatory. You could get out of purgatory 15 years sooner simply by, on the first step leading up to the Vatican, you'd have to give a certain amount of money. But that wasn't for you. That was for a cousin or a nephew or some relative. Then the next step, money in the plate, certain amount of money, it would help that other relative until you got all the way up to the top step. And by then, my golly, I don't know how much money you've given. But then you could buy your own way out of purgatory. Really? I mean, I'm not sure what it takes for people to begin to understand truth. And honestly, it's beliefs. It's not your experiences. Experiences will never, ever be exactly the same, but who cares? I mean, they don't separate people. It's your beliefs. You know, I remember once the angel came to me and said, when I, you know, had decided to take on a mate, and the angel said, you know, we want you to get rid of all of your beliefs and all of the things that you would, you know, think that you should, you know, forbid that person to do. And I said, well, aren't there moral issues involved here? I mean, you know, there are some things that in a relationship that, you know, moral issues. And they said, it's not for you to decide. They said, you worry about you. You know, they said, you don't worry about her. God does. And I had a hard time with that one. Trust me, I had a hard time with that one. But they were adamant that you don't own anyone. And so therefore, don't think that you have the right to tell that person what they can believe or what, you know, their moral standing is. And so let go of it all. Oh, my goodness gracious, I tell you what, I wrestled with that just like Jacob wrestled with the angel for days before he was finally won. And he was touched on the hip, and his hip was never the same after that. I asked the angels once if maybe that was the way to do it. Should I, you know, wrestle with the angel? They said, we would advise that you don't. That's not the way we would advise it. So, but I asked, you know, and trust me, if you know me, you're going to find that I am always asking. I want to know. I mean, and sometimes it's really not for the purposes of being over you. It's that I want to learn. I want to know what you know. If I know what you know and I know what I know, hey, is that the best of both worlds? You know, Holy Writ, Jesus is referred to as, in the original Greek, a rabbi. And we have to remember that. And, I mean, he gave us all that we needed. And when God said, let there be light, you know, it's not that there wasn't light. Light has always existed. Even if you can't see it. We may think it's dark out there in space. but God's in it, and the light's in it. It's just of a higher frequency than your eyes can at this point see. But you will see that as you grow in consciousness, you will begin to see light that others have not seen. You will begin to notice things that others don't see. It amazes me that I can walk by, you know, an artifact that's carved into a rock in a mountain. I mean, walk right by it, and I see it, and 100 people can walk by it, and they will never see it. I can take a photograph of it, and they still can't see it. And it is absolutely perfectly plain because it's setting three-dimensionally on top of a rock by itself, and it's not attached to anything except the bottom of it. And it's like, and they still can't see it. And that's the difference. We will, at this point, you know, it is going to be very difficult to not be fooled. And so we have to put ourselves in a place where we're not at a place where we can be fooled. You know, bring in and ask for the assistance of the Christ, you know, who you worship, or the Holy Trinity even, and ask for that guidance and assistance. Take me by the hand and walk me, you know, in every place that I should be. Had King David not been able to kill the giant with a stone, you know, in the forehead, and who'd have thought? I mean, do you think anybody today would say, oh, yeah, hey, Johnny over there, do me a favor, go out there in the field and kill that giant with a stone? I mean, you know, it would be almost considered cruelty to your child if you did that. I mean, and yet, you know, I believe that David was Seven's son. Now, you know, the rest were warriors, but, you know, and he was the shepherd. And it lent itself to the shepherd kings, which to this day are known that way, the shepherd kings. You know, because they tend their flocks, and that's what they focus on. He could kill a lion with his slingshot. I mean, he was confident. And the other thing was, I had an angel ask me one time, you know why David was so, was looked at as being so special and part of, you know, a man after God's own heart? And I said, an inkling, but I'm listening. And the angel said, because he was anointed by Samuel, and he was anointed that he would be king, though he would not raise his hands against someone else who was anointed. So he waited for time to pass, and all of Saul's relatives were gone. And he took the kingship. But what made him so special was that he looked at every battle that he went into. I don't care if there were 10,000 and there was only 1,000 Israelites. He looked at it as though, you know, if God anointed me king, he didn't do so that I can go into this battle and be slaughtered. He looked at it as though, if God anointed me, then when God's ready to take me home, it wouldn't matter if I was a king, a pauper, or, you know, beggar on the streets. Then I would go home. He said, but, you know, God anointed me. He said, so I go into that battle knowing that, he said, and I come out victorious. He said, and that's the way we should live our life, is to stand up, walk into it, and if we have to, speak our truth. It doesn't matter if anybody else thinks it's their truth or if anybody else wants to listen to it, but you speak it. Because when you do, that person that heard it will take it within themselves, and they will have to determine whether or not it really rings true. You give them the opportunity is what you're doing, even if they get angry at you to start with. I've had people over in the commissioner's office that said to me, you know, don't preach to me, you know. I'm not preaching to you, you know? I mean, I really am not, because when I go in those places, I know enough to have a good attitude, to be laughing, smiling. But, you know, sometimes that makes them madder. I mean, even Jesus did that. When they were whipping him, when they were putting the crown of thorns on his head, he laughed and he joked the whole time. And it only made the Romans madder. But the Romans didn't crucify Jesus. Let's get that straight. It was the Jews, the Sanhedrin, that ordered his death. There just happened to be an empty cross, and so they went to Pontius Pilate and asked if they could use it. But, and so Pontius Pilate said yes. But he washed his hands of the whole mess and said, I find no fault in this man. Well, what more can you say? I mean, so, but it wasn't that, and why was he arrested in the first place? Taxes. You know, the taxes were not paid on the silver that was given to Judas. How much silver? You know, it was a lot. When we think of silver, we think that they gave him a few coins, or that's how much was paid, a few coins here, a few coins there. It was the same amount paid for Joseph by, you know, to his brothers when they put him into slavery. And, you know, it talks about the silver in a way that it lets you know that there was massive amounts of silver. They were silver bars, and they were probably hard to carry even because they were so heavy. But, you know, he was identified with a kiss on the cheek. Even, I think the mafia used that in time. But it's really, when it comes to polarity, again, when it comes to a mate, you can't have two futures. If you look ahead and you say, well, I want to go Monday and do this. Well, okay. And the other one says, well, I want to do this on Monday. Well, you can't have both of them occur. If you push it and fight it, well, you're just creating more polarity. And you'll find that there cannot be two futures if you are a mate and you're trying to become one. So there has to be a talking about what you're going to do ahead of time and when, and not too far ahead because obstacles will be put in your way, but, you know, close to it, flow and keep flowing. And if you want to do something specific, then right before it's time, you know, then you bring it up and hopefully you both agree one way or another. If you have to give a little, guys, give a little or a lot. You're probably going to have to give a lot, you know, because let's face it. I mean, you know, women in this day and age are becoming the ones who are in control. They're, you know, they're running for president. I mean, it's the Aquarian age, and that is a female water bearer. And so it became fully enacted in the year 2000. And so we are having to look at things much differently. But flow. Learn to flow and call forth the aspect of Christ or the Holy Trinity, whichever you wish to do, you know, or whoever you worship, and ask that they create that third so that it combines the two is one. And you have no polarity. Otherwise, you create something of your own self, it swings a pendulum, and that pendulum comes back and it takes away everything you just gained, and usually it takes a little more with it. Look at the guy who wrote the book, The Secret. You know, what did he forget? He forgot to put God into it. And you can do it of yourself. Just envision it, and it will come to pass. Well, it did. But he ended up going to prison for I don't know how many years, you know, because, you know, you have to take into account that there's a Trinity or that there is polarity, and you need to combine the two into one for what you want. And don't tell God, I want a convertible with leather seats. I mean, you know, then you're really doing the creation and you're telling God what to do. You know, all you need is good transportation, right? And you like to have a few niceties if you can. But you leave that up to God. And I guarantee you'll probably get more than you could have ever imagined. Sorry, Sandy, it's your turn.
No, I totally agree with you. The thing is when we come down to the earth, you know, we're looking at duality. We're looking at positive and negative, male and female, you know. But in the reality, to be able to grow into full spirituality, you must combine the third. Everything that is a full of spiritual is in a trinity. So you're looking at the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. You know, you're looking at everything in threes. And so you have the swing to the left, the swing to the right, but then you have your center point too, just as you were talking about the caduceus with the snakes weaving up the pole. You have three things, the two snakes and the bull. So, yeah, you're right. Everything is like a sacred geometry. And in these patterns that we have, it matches the universal patterns. So what we're really trying to do is we're trying to recreate here on Earth what's already existing in heaven. And so as we come down here to Earth, we're learning to bring heaven to Earth so that we can raise Earth vibrations back up to heaven.
You're right. You know how many people I talk to that they still think that the devil is red with horns and a tail?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, but Lucifer was one of the most beautiful angels created. And they say, well, that was then. But once he fell, oh, no, he turned red with horns and a tail. You know, and I'm like, oh, my golly. You know, you'll never see evil coming if that's what you think it looks like. because it'll come in something you desire more than anything in the world. And that's why it's so hard.
I totally agree with you. It is.
And evil exists in spirit only. It doesn't exist on the planet. I tell people about that all the time. They go, well, of course it does. Look at the guy over there that just murdered 10 people and this fighting over there and that over here. And I said, yeah, but it's people. The people have to let the evil that is in spirit in. And once it gets in, oh, it can go crazy. I mean, people can do things you'd never expect them to do. Even people that are close to you, you have to be careful, you know, and both remain in that, you know, that trinity, in that two is one, so that you don't have one, you know, trying to undermine the other.
Exactly. And you're going to see that we're in an extreme change of earth changes. You know, we have a planetoid that's in our system that's putting magnetic pressures on our sun and on the planets themselves. It's getting closer, you know. And as it does, it causes more reactions in our sun, which causes more solar flares and coronal mass ejections and a lot of different activities that can affect the earth itself. And as the magnetic fields are thinning from all of the winds and storms and plasma and everything that's being directed at the earth, you know, it comes into the planet. It affects our physical bodies, the magnetic fields around our physical bodies, and it causes us to process. And it means that if you have plasma going into your body, it's going to force out the lower vibrational darkness that's within it. It's going to push it to the surface. But what does it do when it's at the surface? It's like a big old flag. It's looking for a situation to play itself out so it can view it physically and say, hey, I don't want that anymore. Let's let go of it. And you let go of it.
And what's the best way to let go of it? How many baptisms have we done on ourselves even?
Yeah.
Five, exactly. Probably.
Yeah.
I mean,
there
for a while we used to do them every year.
Mm-hmm. You know, baptisms are great. You know, you could do things by viewing them in meditations. You know, a lot of times just reading the Bible, you know, reading spiritual materials, you know, keeps you in alignment with a higher vibrational energy. And that's what you're trying to do, is hold this higher vibrational energy so you don't get pulled under like a big old wave, you know, tumbling you underneath it.
Yeah, that happened a couple of times.
Right.
You know, and you're right about that. I mean, actually, you know, it's holding that as your vision, as your truth. Don't look left, don't look right, because you will find that there's something on the right or something on the left that you have always wanted, and it will pull you off your path in a minute.
And, you know, there's some real important things to realize, too, that in the physical plane, people say, oh, man, this is a hard job living on this physical planet. Well, yeah, it can be, but there's also endless amounts of opportunities. When you can open your mind to the point of what you see is what you get is what is not all that exists on this planet, that we have another level, not just the physical and the mental, but there is a spiritual level. There's your trinity, your connection back to God. And when you can understand the spiritual level, you can understand that all life is animated by spirit, even plants, animals, you know, even rocks, you know, everything has an energy within it and a life force. And when we can learn to grow and communicate or accept it, you know, things change. Your whole world changes. A whole new door opens to understand the possibilities, to see clairvoyantly, to be able to see energy and motion. You know, sometimes if you just stare out into the sky, you know, you can start to see these little moving energies of light. They almost like little squiggly lines at times. You have to gaze. You're kind of like staring and gazing. And all of a sudden, you begin to see the energy in motion. And otherwise, all you see is just the physical plane.
Sometimes it looks like it's raining when you look outside through the window, and it's actually the energy that is pouring down.
Exactly. So there's a whole world out there to explore, but most people are too ashamed to say, oh, well, maybe I could hear something other people couldn't hear, or I could see something that other people couldn't see. They'll think I'm weird. You know, weird. You know, it's an evolutionary process. We're growing into a spiritual, higher developed consciousness. And so the idea of it is that you've got to be yourself. You are who you are. And if you ask to evolve into another level of consciousness, you have to accept the reality of what it's going to be like there.
Right. And you are judging yourself if you, you know, won't go there, or I can't let myself, you know, say that I believe in this or that or whatever it was, or I saw this or I saw that, you know, because pretty much everything on this planet is illusionary. But the idea here is that, you know, don't judge yourself. We are our own worst judge.
Right. And we have to realize that everything in heaven, you know, Earth is a mirror image of it. And it's all made through sacred geometries. So we got to look back. And we look at things like the Fibonacci, the golden mean spiral. You know, all of these patterns, you know, 1.698, you know, or the Fibonacci, 1 and 1 and 1 is 2, and 1 and 2 is 3, and 2 and 3 is 5. And you continue and continue to you on like that. You know, these are patterns of development in nature.
Right, and look for what Jesus, even when Jesus manifested, he always did things in fives, like the fish and the loaves, or 5,000 people he fed. I mean, five was his number of manifestation, because it's Fibonacci.
Right, you know, our physical bodies are temples. We don't have temples that we go to like you did at ancient times. Our temples are our physical bodies. It's what houses our soul, which is what connects us to spirit. So our physical body is our temple. And we have to realize, if we're going to fill our physical body with crap, with junk, if we're going to fill it with drugs and alcohol and curse words and unhealthy foods, you know, what's it going to do to your temple? It's not going to be pure. It's not going to be ready to
receive. It's even the words you use,
light.
Curse words.
Yeah.
You know, when you use them too often, they literally can come back on you and create what it is that you were complaining about and use the curse word.
Right. You know? And so because we're in this polarity planet, we have choice. And you know what's easier? To do things that you don't have to work at. You just do things because, oh, I don't want to put the effort in. I don't want to have to try to be kind to that person when I really don't like them. You know, I don't want to have to do this or that. It's a weak, whiny way of living. You know, if you want to truly be one with the Almighty, it takes work. It takes effort. It's not like you just take the easy route. Yeah, just kill the person, you know. But, you know, where do you come up with these ideas? It's like life is so special. We are given every opportunity to explore every avenue through from here to eternity.
And
from
the chance to be able to, you know, to know God has never abandoned us. And I can tell you, God has never broke a promise. He is not a man that he should lie. And, you know, everything that has ever come to me from God, I mean, you know, it's there. I mean, it's just waiting for us to walk the path. And it'll show up on the path. It's just that simple if we stay in the movement. And we have to get out of the duality. How many football teams play at one time? Two. How many baseball teams? Two. How many people run for president in reality? Two. Vice president? Two. I mean, it's one against the other. And when that occurs, there is friction and there is polarity that it begins to heighten, especially if you have 70,000 fans in a stadium, and when that occurs, then it creates an energy called a scalar wave, and it's the particle that goes down the hole, the rabbit hole, and it becomes a wave, and it can be tapped into by those not so shiny people or light, and it can be utilized for, you know, not so shiny things. Now, we don't take everything into consideration that we do, yet I've seen people have parties planned, and because their team lost that day, they canceled the party, didn't want anybody coming over, went home and cried. I mean, goodness gracious, really? I mean, you know, really? I can't quite go there, but, you know, I've known lots of people who do. But if you're not sure, and you're going to find that some people that you've been able to trust in the past just aren't there for you always anymore. But when you walk into a house, the first thing you say, and you have to say it out loud, but you can say it under your breath, as you say, peace be unto this house. And if there's any agendas going on or somebody's got something, you know, hidden that, you know, they, somebody told them about you or whatever it may be, it will appear and show itself within a couple of minutes and just leave. You know, it's that simple. Don't sit there and try to convince the person that, you know, they're right, you know, or you're right. This never happened, though. Somebody's lying. Just leave, you know, because once it's in, once somebody lets it in, it's real hard to get it out.
And one thing, too, is that, you know, if you really want to open doors to reach higher levels of consciousness and all, you know, music, singing, but not just any type of music, you know, there has to be a pureness to the music, and there has to be an understanding of when you use sound and vibration. You know, these are the creative tools of the world. And there are specific types of sounds that have been hidden, you know, for a long time that
or
have
changed.
Only been exposed over the last, you know, 10 years or so.
Or changed. Right. Well, it's even longer than that. I mean,
you know, so you have the solfeggio sounds, which are very powerful, ancient sounds that were taken out and then finally, you know, brought back.
Who removed those?
Yeah, we know.
The Black Robe God. And, you know, not one of them has went to jail. I mean, does that tell you something, too? I mean, you know, we have to start seeing the signs. You know, we think we see the signs. Well, I see the signs. You know, I can see, you know, moon's full and when it's not. But I tell you what, have you noticed that it never comes up in the same spot anymore? And half the time, you know, it goes across the sky from south to north or north to south. And, I mean, and the craters that used to be on the moon, they're not there anymore when you view it. I think that the moon is starting to
The moon is tilting.
Yes.
The moon is tilting because there's a magnetic field that's in our solar system that is tilting not only the moon, it's tilting our planet and more than likely other planets too. But it's tilting it. And it's on the Earth because of the tilt, it rocks it back and forth, And it's weakening the poles of the planet. You know? And it's causing unusual disturbances in weather patterns. Look at our weather. I mean, there's flooding everywhere, all across the globe, you know, in every country. And there's, you know, we haven't even fully hit hurricane season, but I can tell you, this is going to be a really harsh
season. They're not telling us it all either. I mean, there are things happening across this globe that you'll never see on the mass media. It's just not going to tell you. And for what you do see, it's about 30% of what's really going on.
That's probably true.
You know, tell me there's not going to be a third world war that comes out of the Middle East. Well, it's been predicted, not by me, but the prophets of old. And, you know, the New Madrid Fault, it is going to go. If you live on it, best if you can start looking around for another place to go. I'm just saying, over the next few years, probably, you're going to see the New Madrid Fault. Unless mankind changes the way that they view what they do, and they become more into one. Because every 7 years, there's a cycle. And God judges whether or not mankind has either, you know, as a whole, kept the law or defied it in every way possible. And if you're found in want, then there are going to be repercussions that come right after the seven-year cycle. And every 7 years of 49 years, is the Jubilee. And that year, oh my goodness gracious, that year is when the maximum of judgment occurs. And it's not God, it's us. You know, we are either making the right choices and decisions, and sometimes, most times, we know whether it is or not. You know, and it's us. We're the ones that came here. We're the ones that wanted free will, and God gave it to us. And so don't think for a minute that solar activity in the form of coronal mass ejections aren't a cause from the consciousness of those who live on this planet. When we are in anger and upset and just out of control, so is the sun. It's the ruler of our system. And what makes us think that we don't have an effect on it? We think that the stars affect us. The stars and the sun and the moon, that they have, you know, an energy that affects us. Oh, don't sign anything when it's in retrograde. We know we're coming up on a time when seven planets will be in retrograde at the same time. You know, what are you going to do? Sit in your living room, turn off all the lights, and just wait for it to get over? No. You know, the planets were made for us. The stars were made for us. And we were given dominion over those systems. We can take that energy and that light, and we can transform it simply by channeling it in the correct way.
This is correct, yeah. And, you know, we when we're combining our energies with the light of the Christ, when we are one with the divine Holy Trinity, the light of God, then we have endless amounts of power. We're like, in you look at sacred geometries, we're like the little wave that's embedded into the big waves, almost like the little Russian dolls, you know, the little one inside the big ones, you know. We are that. And we are one in alignment with all of the perfect energies of God when we stay in that oneness. And so our abilities to manifest, to draw upon that energy, that light, you know, is limitless.
But the biggest law in that is receiving for the purposes of sharing. If you receive anything as a gift and it comes to you from God and you don't share a portion of it, oh, you know, it will rebound on you no matter what it is. I mean, I had a prisoner ask me one time, raise his hand. He said, I want to win the lottery. Now, he was making $200,000 a year, okay? And you still want to win the lottery. Yeah, how much do you want to win? $1 million. You want to win $1 million. I said, have you prayed about it? He said, oh, absolutely. And so I just closed my eyes for a minute. I said, you know what? I hear you can have that $1 million. You're going to hit the lottery within the next couple of weeks for $1 million. Now, there's a key to it. I said, when you get it, you have to take that $1 million and spread it out among people who are in, you know, have less than you do, or in poverty, or in need food or hunger, or blankets for the homeless. I mean, all of it, every penny of it has to be spent on them. Well, I'm not going to do that. Then you won't get that $1 million. That's simple. You know, I mean, all the money he had, you know, and he was doing well. And yet, you know, it was asked that would you help those who have less, who are in great need? And yet, the answer came back, no, I can't. I won't do that.
Well, how many people who have won the lottery in no time at all are broke again?
Yeah, they borrow from it. I had one guy that used to carry $100,000 around his trunk because he didn't trust anybody. It made him a nut. Or nuts, you know, because he thought somebody was going to steal it. I thought, well, they got a better chance of stealing it in your trunk than they do in a safe deposit box at the bank.
Yeah, for sure.
Or buy yourself a good safe, you know, and drill that bad boy into concrete. But it's amazing how we think. I knew somebody who hit the lottery 3 times in a row.
That's pretty lucky.
That is more than luck. But did they do with it what they were supposed to? Because you know what? God would make a covenant with the Israelites on one day, and they would make a covenant, and this was how the law was going to be, and God would continue to bless them, and they would prosper. Then Satan would come along the next day, and you'll find him in Scripture with the word Lord sometimes, and it'll be a little L, or it'll be Bel, B-E-L, with a couple of other letters after it. And it's actually, that's Satan. And when he would come the next day, he would tell them, I'll give you those crops right now. I'll make your crops grow so fast that tomorrow morning when you wake up, they'll be 5 foot tall, and the ears on them will be so big that, you know, they wouldn't hold another ear. And I'll continue to make it rain, and I'll make sure that you have everything you need, the best of houses, the best of places to live. And you know what? They all you have to do is take your firstborn out and burn them on the altar fires. Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, you know, really? I mean, and yet, you know how many of them did? Many, 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 many. They would crucify their own children, their own firstborn, on the altar of fire to be able to get the blessing from Satan. I mean, even the day after they had made the covenant with God. I mean, really? I mean, are we really that susceptible to to that? I mean, can you imagine today your child taking them out and putting them on the altar and light them up, you know? Because tomorrow it's going to rain and my crops are going to be 5 foot tall. I mean, I just, what is that? It's an influence that makes its way in, if you let it, and it can grow. You know,
it's a disconnect.
Yes, and it's been said that if one discarnate entity can get in a body, that it will bring six more with it. And I can't even, can you imagine that kind of consciousness? I mean, it could cause you to do all kinds of things, but is there much of anything worse than, you know, than sacrificing your firstborn on the altar of fire?
No.
And then they would use the ashes to help make the brick for the cornerstone of their house. I mean, you know, it was Moses who finally put a stop to it, you know, during the Exodus. But, you know, I mean...
Well, we just have to pray history won't repeat itself.
Yeah, but
way.
It does repeat itself. That's the thing, isn't it? Is that it's cycled. Everything is cycled. And what we do is the cycles allow us to see what came before. And we look at it and we go, no, not again. And so if we can change the cycles, we have a way out. If not, the snake keeps eating its own tail. And you can't get out. You'll just keep going around that wheel, around that wheel, around that wheel. And trust me, there aren't enough systems, years, lifetimes, whatever it is, to be able to experience every bite of that apple. They're just not.
This is correct. There isn't.
And so we have to change it. How do we change it? We're afraid to speak it out. Well, if I went out there and started talking like that to people that I know, well, I mean, you know, I'd never hear the end of it. Well, good. You know, I mean, the key is we have to stand up. There's no choice anymore. We have to stand up. We have to stand up for God and let people think what they will or do what they will. But for us, it was what Joshua said. He said, let others do as they will. But as for me and my household, we shall serve the Lord.
And that's a stand that everyone should take. You know, the oneness with God is where we need to be at all times, even in the toughest of times.
Right. And you said music. Try, sing a song or a hymn, even. Most of you know the old hymns. Sing a hymn and try to think of something bad. You can't. The two are not able to exist at the same time. It will keep your mind free and clear if you need it to be. And so, you know, needless to say, I spend most of my day singing. Sometimes, you know, my wife will look at me and she go, you know, I like that song and you sing it very nice, but could you change it? You know, can you do a different song? Because I don't think about it. I mean, I can do a song over and over and over and over and over again. But she'll go, can you maybe just change the song? Sorry. Yes, I can. You hear her laughing in the background.
You do have a good voice, there's no doubt. But the
not
same
the
words
same
repeated over and over grows a little old at times.
Right. And, you know, I've tried to create, you know, like in the old days, I mean, where, you know, you had a minister come in as just as a guest, and a couple of people or a little group that would sing, and it was a revival. And, I mean, it would crowd a tent or crowd a church, and even when we were in Africa, there were 150 people outside sitting on a rocky ground and 300 in the church. I mean, how many of you today would sit on the rocky ground outside just to hear somebody talk? Yet they did. And no greater faith than that, you know, I mean, have I seen in this country. And so the whole idea, again, is, you know what to do. Stand up for God. And if you know that, you know, that what you're doing is got corruption involved in it, or it's taking something that it could better be used for others. You know, people will justify things all over the place. Well, I want $2 million so I can get three new chairs and pave my parking lot. Well, you know what? I mean, $2 million? Give me $1 million of it, and I'll build you a mansion. And the other million, we can give to the poor, because there's a lot of people that don't have health care, a lot of people that don't have food, you know. And you'll create a food system which has very little food in it in the bag, and you'll make people wait for hours to get to it, and they have to come pick it up. Really? I mean, really? You can't get volunteers from the church. They may every other week. We do here. We've given out over, 140-some bags of food just this year alone.
Mm-hmm.
Huge bags. I mean, set in UPS boxes. So, you know, we have, and I'm not bragging, because this comes from people, Northern Virginia, comes
our
from people.
Groups, yeah.
Yeah, our outreach groups, you know, and they bring it down. We box it all up and bag it all up, and then we deliver it to them personally. And if you could see the look on their faces when you pull up into the driveway, it's like, you know, I mean, it's
grateful.
A beautiful thing. Oh, the gratefulness. And the things they reveal, you know, many of them are very spiritual. And they can reveal things to you that you never thought of. And it's just wonderful to be able to talk to people. People who are ill, can you pray with them? I mean, you know, where two or more gather.
Absolutely.
Again, our number is 304-567-3354, or the 800 number is 1-800, is it 860?
6605.
And call us. Ask us any questions spiritually you want. I mean, anyone. I don't care what it is. Ask if you want to know a little piece of something that you've been working or trying to figure out. Call us. I mean, you know, or email. Email us at Sandy's Angel Talk with an S, Sandy's Angel Talk at AOL.com. And, you know, we'd be more than willing to help in any way we can. For anyone out there who has a family member or knows someone who is, you know, has the disease of Alzheimer's, you know, if they've started getting to the place where they are becoming violent, you know, email me or give us a call, because, you know, there is something that is going on there that you need to know about. And I don't think anybody else is talking about it or figuring it out. They don't want to. But, you know, it can be really dangerous. I mean, I remember I had a great-grandfather had Parkinson's, and I remember they caught him in the kitchen one night with a butcher knife in his hand. So, you know, needless to say, he didn't stay there any longer.
Yeah. But we want to thank everybody that's been listening to our radio show, and we do hope that you can join us again in 2 weeks.
And we want to thank BBS. I mean, they are just absolutely beyond wonderful. I mean, they have accommodated us in ways that we didn't even ask for, but they did it anyway. And, you know, they're spreading out into a faith-based system of channels. And, you know, I know they're putting out a lot of money for that, but receiving for the purposes of sharing. They are following and putting into action, you know, God's law. And creation only occurs in movement. It never occurs in stillness. And, you know, they are just wonderful. I wish I had more words to tell you about them, but just know that, you know, that this radio station, BBS, I mean, it's unlike any other.
Thanks, and we look forward to joining you again in 2 weeks.
God bless.